Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 18, 2020. Taylor Schwenk is producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut, but I got you beat today, Taylor. I am sitting at the shore of Lake George. You can actually hear the water in the background, yes?
Yeah, you can hear the water. You can hear a bird or some sort of insect chirping. You sent me a picture. It's quite serene. So, yeah, you definitely got me beat today. I'm a little bit jelly.
Yeah, and their boat's going through, so you might hear that in the background during the course of the podcast.
Love it.
Man, I just love being here and love talking about baseball. Like last night, Corey and Kyle Seager became the first brothers to homer in the same game since 2001. Give a listen to this. The first to hit the home run was Corey Seager.
Seager lifts a fly ball to right center field. Back towards the wall. He's done it again. Halfway up the pavilion, and he's got a three-run home run. And a smile for Big Bro as he rounds third and heads home. Priceless facial reactions from both.
Kyle Seager, he just kind of smirked when...
Yeah. It wasn't a smile, it was a smirk.
That's awesome.
Moment from the backyard, done on a big league field.
Here is Kyle Seager. Seager going right back, same territory. Next pitch, Bellinger gone! Back-to-back smashes! All right, Seager versus Seager. Home run total is even. One apiece.
Yeah, and how cool was that? The two brothers smiling at each other as they round the bases, trying to stifle that smile, though, out of respect for their pitchers, Taylor.
Yeah, just a little smirk, a little, oh, you a-hole. I can't believe you did that. All wrapped into there. Yeah, I saw a lot of emotion coming out of that little facial expression.
It was really cool. Tough day for the San Diego Padres in terms of the injury news. Tommy Pham is likely out 4 to 6 weeks with a broken hand. He could miss the rest of the regular season, according to his manager. It's possible he could come back, depending on pain management. Closer Kirby Yates went for a second opinion with elbow specialist Dr. Keith Meister on Monday. And now expectations are that he'll undergo season-ending surgery. That, according to San Diego Union-Tribune. So for the Padres, two big losses. Now, during the course of the game last night, Fernando Tatis Jr. had himself a night.
1-0 is laced towards a gap in left center field. That ball is back, and it is gone. Fernando Tatis Jr. in a line drive, three-run home run. Get out of here in a hurry. He's into double figures in home runs. That's number 10 of the season. And the Padres jump on top, 10-3. This is in the air to right field. Back it goes. Nendo has done it again. Fernando Tatis Jr., a grand slam. And the Padres go on top 14-3. Two home runs, seven RBIs for Fernando Tatis Jr.
Those were the home run calls by Don Arcillo, Mud Grant on Fox Sports San Diego. I will tell you, the Rangers were really unhappy with something that happened with that second home run. They weren't happy with Tatis Jr. We'll be talking about that with Dave Schoenfield coming up. Some news about the Mariners, Kendall Graveman. He's been pitching with a benign bone tumor in his spine, but he intends to keep working. He talked with the reporters about that on Monday. The Yankees expect that DJ LeMahieu will miss the next 2 to 3 weeks because of that sprained thumb that we talked about in yesterday's podcast. The Yankees' Giancarlo Stanton spoke with reporters yesterday and shared his frustration with all the injuries that he's experienced. He's currently out for about 3 more weeks. His quote to reporters, "I'm disappointed in myself. I would be disappointed if I was rooting for me. Words can't really describe the disappointment I've had over this." Prize prospect Casey Mize will debut for the Detroit Tigers on Wednesday. Casey Mize, 26 starts in the minors, 2.85 ERA, 123 innings, just 26 walks, and 120 strikeouts. And Albert Pujols moved much closer to a milestone last night with this.
Albert hits one out to left field toward the corner. Does it have enough height? That one is off the wall. It'll bring home two. Albert's going to try to get the second. And he is in there with a two RBI double, and the Angels are on top 5-3.
Boy, that close for Albert. That close for 660 in his career.
Yeah, he needs one more home run for 660. He needs one more RBI to tie Alex Rodriguez for third place in Major League Baseball history. The Mets and the Marlins yesterday, and Pete Alonso, my fishing partner, had himself a day.
And Alonso crushes another one, and this one's going out of here. Second of the night for Alonso, and he hits a tape measure shot. Cano and Alonso go back to back, and the Mets are having a party in Miami. It's 10-2 New York.
Gary Cohen on SNY. The Cubs and the Cardinals played a doubleheader yesterday. The Cardinals took game one. This is what happened in the top of the sixth inning of game two.
And David drives one in the air toward deep center field. Back goes Bader to the center field fence. That ball is gone. Three-run homer, David Bote. Cubs lead 5-4.
And that would be the final score. Pat Hughes with that call on the Cubs radio network. The two teams splitting the doubleheader. Now, before we get to Dave Schoenfield and to Dan Connolly of The Athletic to talk about the contending Baltimore Orioles, we have to talk about the new ESPN radio lineup, specifically Greeny, hosted by friend of the podcast, Mike Greenberg. My friend, he's back on radio. He'll still be hosting Get Up, but he's getting back to his roots. I joined him for that very first episode yesterday. I actually had to pull off the roads at a filling station to do that interview because I was in the middle of the woods here in New York. It was a lot of fun. I think people are really going to enjoy it. Greeny is on ESPN Radio from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time every single day, and you can also listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
And David Schoenfield last week filled in for me. I got to start with that. Thanks for doing that, Dave.
No, that was fun. Taylor, got us through somehow. But it was fun to fill in.
Yeah, I don't. The one thing that I don't like about this is that the last 2 days, Taylor's getting way too many kudos. Tim Person was blowing him up yesterday. You're saying nice things about him today. I'm not really happy about that.
Well, you know, when your back's against the wall, you got to step up. He came through in the clutch and raised his game to a new level.
Go ahead, Taylor. You can do your victory lap here.
Well, Buster, I'll give you some credit. You gave me a pretty good education during this whole pandemic thing. So I'm really just I'm the monster that you've created. It's all back on you. Honestly.
Wow. I feel like that he's like Nuclear Lush and I'm Crash Davis, the way that he just went through that. He was giving me the cliche quotes, Dave.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he takes it one day at a time.
Exactly. All right, let's start with this. You being a Seattle guy, let's talk about the Seager brothers. Corey and Kyle last night became the first brothers to homer in the same game since 2001. Felipe and Cesar Crespo did it June 7, 2001. But easily the most enjoyable part of that were the grins that both of them were suppressing as the other hit home runs and then rounded the bases. Yes.
Yeah. It was really cool. Remember, this was the first time they had played against each other in a regular season game. Back Mariners and Dodgers played in 2018, but Corey was hurt. Before that, 2015, before Corey had been called up. So, in fact, I remember talking to Kyle a couple years ago, and at that time, they hadn't even played against each other in a spring training game. And he said he had only seen Corey play once on a baseball field in like 10 years.
Wow.
He took a break from college and saw him go play like a junior high game or whatever Corey was at the time. So as good as these guys are, they hardly ever see each other play in person. So that was a really cool moment last night.
And I got a feel for how much how proud Kyle is of his younger brother. A few years ago, I had this weird connection with these guys. I think, you know, it's never been proven. I want to make that absolutely clear. But there was a Dodger game in St. Louis. And as you know, you have that situation where the team's taking batting practice and the fans are out behind the rope line. And as I was walking out onto the field, this person called me over, and I think it was Corey and Kyle's uncle. And he yelled at me, said, "You know, you're related to the Seegers." And I'm like, "What?" Like that's kind of out of the blue. And then he explains, he said, "Yeah, you know, they have back in their history, there's an only, from upstate New York. And you guys have the family tree goes back." He didn't know exactly where it was. He was like, "We have the same great, great, great something." And I was like, and everything he told me matched up with my family history in terms of, you know, where our family is in upstate New York in the Lake George area. And, you know, as I sit here today, it's funny. I'm at Lake George. I'm staring out of the water talking with you. And so, you know, I didn't get a chance that day to ask Corey about it. But the next weekend, coincidentally, we had Mariners and Cubs on Sunday Night Baseball. And so I walked up to Kyle and I said, "Hey, one of your family members told me that we're related." And Kyle nodded. He goes, "Yeah, my dad's been telling me that since I was like 13, 14 years old. And we're watching you on baseball tonight." Again, it's never been proven. I've never seen the actual link that we have. But it's why when we've done highlights on the Baseball Tonight podcast in recent years, I've always said, cousin Kyle or cousin Corey when I mentioned the highlights and how they did. And it was funny when I talked to Kyle, I said, "Man, can you imagine how shocked people would be that I'm related to you guys?" And Kyle laughed. He said, "Well, that's kind of how I feel when people, you know, find out that I'm related to Corey, because he thinks Corey is such a better athlete and so much better than he is."
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they do not look like brothers. Facially, they do, but physically, obviously, much different builds, with Corey taller and leaner and Kyle built more like a fire hydrant. But yeah, you know, great family. I know they both mentioned last night that they regret their parents unable to be there back home in North Carolina. Their dad was their baseball coach growing up. They had another brother who played in the minor league. So yeah, I think Kyle maybe is underestimating his own athleticism, a very, very athletic family. And, I know their parents were watching from home and enjoying the night.
So, Dave, I thought we were past the whole point where we had baseball's unwritten rules and guys would be offended. I thought we were sort of beyond that, but it was clear from developments last night that is not the case. First off, Fernando Tatis Jr. has another amazing night. He had two home runs, but on the second one, he missed a take sign on a 3-0 count, swung, and hit his second homer of the game. And after the game, his manager, Jace Tingler, acknowledged that he had ignored the take sign. In fact, when Fernando Tatis Jr. got back to the dugout, that's what Tingler told him. His manager said, "No, you know, you're not supposed to do that." And of course, Tingler for a long time was with the Texas Rangers organization, so he had a feel for how upset the Rangers people were. The quote from Tingler last night: "He's young, a free spirit, and focused, and all those things. That's the last thing we'll ever take away. It's a learning opportunity, and that's it. He'll grow from it." The next pitch after Fernando Tatis Jr. hit that home run was behind Manny Machado.
Yeah.
Chris Woodward, the manager of the Rangers, said, "I didn't like it personally," speaking of Tatis Jr. swinging on a 3-0 pitch. "But like I said, the norms are being challenged on a daily basis. So just because they don't like it doesn't mean it's not right. I don't think we liked it as a group." And I've thought about this and I've gone back and forth. And I got to tell you, I'm feeling more and more like, get over it. You know what? I get it that when a team has a big lead, you don't necessarily think that a young player swinging at a 3-0 pitch is a good thing. Well, make a better pitch. You know, if his manager's unhappy with him because he ignored the take sign, that's one thing. But, you know, this is not high school basketball where you're taking off the press because one team is a lot better than the other. This is professional baseball. And if it's a 3-0 count, don't groove a fastball. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Look, it was 10-3 at the time, eighth inning, but I'm with you. You know, you're pitching poorly. Every player wants to, you know, add to their stats, you know, and Tatis, not that he's thinking about MVP, you know, 25 games into the season, but bases loaded, you know, of course you want to drive in the run. So I'm with you. You know, just because it's a 3-0 count doesn't mean you got to sit on a, you know, meatball down the middle. So pitch better. You know, come on, this feels like something from 1970, not even like 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but 30 or 40 years ago. Come on.
Just as a moment in the game between the Braves and Nationals felt that way, this was Juan Soto at the plate facing veteran reliever Will Smith. Give a listen.
For the first time. And Juan drives one out to left center. See you later. He knew it. Inciarte knew it. And now we do too. His seventh of the year.
And that was Bob Carpenter, FP Santangelo on Mastin. And my God, Dave, you start with this. He killed that ball. He's 7 home runs in his last 10 games, and he's a left-handed hitter, and he takes the ball out to left center field. He absolutely destroyed that ball. And after he hit it, he stood at home plate for, what, a nanosecond or 2 nanoseconds? He definitely stood and watched it. And Will Smith, you know, said something to him. There clearly you could hear it in that clip we just played. There was some yelling on the field. The home plate umpire actually came out to step in between Will Smith and Soto. And again, I'm like, get over it. I didn't think it was egregious, like what he did. He just watched it for just a little bit, and then he took his trip around the bases. I do think that after being yelled at, he started to slow a little bit between second and third. I think I would, too, if the pitcher started yelling at me.
Look, Juan Soto, you know, we know his reputation among other players is controversial. Let's put it that way, with some of the adjustments he does at home plate. He does tend to admire his home runs. Well, that's because I think every home run he hits is like 20 rows deep into the seats. I'm with you. Don't throw a bad pitch. Get the guy out. Deal with it. You know, and I look, in the end, the Braves got the last laugh because they won the game. But get the guy out. That's the bottom line. You know?
Well, yeah, and we watched the video. And, you know, Will Smith, by all accounts, I don't really know him that well, but by all accounts, he's a really good guy. But he's kind of staring down Juan Soto. It was almost like he was looking for it, yeah. You know? When he clipped the ball because he hit it so hard. But Will's eyes, they're not following the ball. They're just absolutely locked in on Juan Soto.
Yeah, and you're right. It wasn't that egregious. Soto certainly has had, different home run celebrations where he admired the ball for a longer period of time. So, yeah, I thought Will Smith was a little out of line there.
All right, so these statistics came from ESPN Stats and Information. The first person I saw made reference to this was Aldin Gonzalez. About the number of injuries piling up around baseball for pitchers. During the first 24 days of the season, 97 pitchers have been placed on the injured list. We found out yesterday that Kirby Yates is going to require surgery that's likely going to end his season. The 77 pitcher IL stints due to injury are more through the first 24 days of the season than the previous two seasons combined, 68, 2018, 2019. My theories about why this is, obviously this weird season in which there was a shutdown, there hasn't been a consistent regimen. I do wonder about the effects of the training that we've seen in recent years where pitchers are building up their bodies to throw harder than ever. I think physiologically, there's just so much that a body is designed to do. And so when pitchers add, you know, 2 or 3 miles of velocity, I think that probably puts them a little bit more at risk. And I do wonder about this factor, Dave. I'm curious about you. I think there are teams and players playing Operation Shutdown. In other words, there might be a pitcher, he's not feeling so great. He's not feeling great about what's going on in 2020, coronavirus. It's kind of a bootleg season. Maybe the team he's playing on isn't necessarily in it. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of these are, discussions between the team and the pitcher. Hey, if you're dealing with something, even if it's a minor thing, let's get it taken care of. Let's shut you down and let's move on and start to focus on 2021. What do you think?
Yeah, I've wondered about that too. And, you know, we don't know all these details that are being, that are going on behind the scenes, but that makes sense. You're going to be as cautious as possible with your eye towards, you know, 2021. Doesn't mean teams don't want to win. I think most teams do, but on an individual level, do you want to risk, you know, your future, you know, for a 60 game season? So I think I'm with you. Teams are being extra cautious. And I wonder too, sometimes in April, we see pitchers, they come out and they're throwing a couple miles an hour slower than they might, you know, the rest of the year. They slowly ramp up. Plus, as you mentioned, they've had a longer spring training, but with the must win nature of every game, you know, this year, they came out throwing max velocity right out of the gate. So that might be a factor, but I'm with you. I'd like to know how cautious guys are playing this year.
Yeah. General manager said to your point about guys coming out at full speed and ramped up at full velocity. General manager said to me, this is why we have spring training. So guys can gradually build up their velocity and be in a position where they're in shape once the regular season starts. This number jumped out at me from ESPN Stats and Information. Jose Altuve has struck out 21 times in his first 20 games this season, his most in any 20-game stretch in his 1,263-game career. There's no question about it. He looks terrible.
Yeah, I looked into some of the Astros, you know, hitting struggles the other day, and, you know, George Springer looked like some bad luck. You know, Alex Bregman, he's been getting going since I wrote that piece. But Altuve, when you dug into it, there's some real issues going on there. The swing and miss rate is a career high. Yeah, the BABIP is, I think it's 195. So there's some fluke stuff going on there. But he's all out of sync. You know, he had never had a stretch where he'd hit under 200 over this many games over the last 3 years. So we're obviously not used to seeing this from him. And I know, you know, the haters want to point to the cheating, but this just seems like a guy, you know, the proverbial swinging at the breaking ball, taking the fastball down the middle. But remember, too, he's been beat up a little bit the last couple of years. He's 30 years old, so there's some potential aging going on there. He's not a big guy, but somebody we got to watch over, you know, these next few weeks.
And when the sign stealing stuff broke, I remember talking about this on the podcast. You know Alex Bregman's personality. I think he'll be fine. Like, he'll go and play his game no matter what kind of reaction he gets. Jose Altuve was the one guy where I was like, and the interesting part about this is, you know, we've heard from Carlos Correa. We've seen the statistics from that study that was done on how many, you know, bangs that each player benefited from. I think it's pretty clear that, and I've heard this from people who are on the team, Jose Altuve really wasn't involved in that hardly at all. But he's such a nice person. Like, when you talk to him, and I did wonder, boy, I kind of think he might take it to heart a little bit more. The criticism, you know, all the blowback, all the social media stuff, maybe more than a lot of the other players did.
Yeah, this was something we talked about back in March before the season got shut down, is we did wonder, okay, if somebody gets off to a slow start in the Houston lineup, is it going to get into their heads? You know,
right.
So we were speculating on that. And in Altuve's case, that seems certainly to be the case.
All right, this is what happened last night in that the end of that Nationals and Braves game. Dansby Swanson at the plate. Give a listen.
Fly ball, well hit center. Robles going back to the track, to the wall, and it's gone! Dansby with a walk-off homer in the ninth. Unbelievable! Atlanta with two two-run homers in the ninth inning stun the Nationals, and their rebuilt bullpen. Atlanta wins round one of this 10-round heavyweight fight in 2020 in a walk-off home run fashion from Dansby Swanson, a straightaway center.
That was our friend Chip Carey on the Braves television network. And just watching that last night, first off, I love the home run celebration. Socially distant 2020, Dansby Swanson crosses home plate and just puts his hands in the air, and they're all jumping up with their hands in the air like little kids doing half a jumping jack, that sort of thing. But in watching that, you know, the Braves win that game. They obviously have had their share of devastating injuries. Mike Soroka going down. You know, when you look at the Mets, they've had all kinds of problems, starting with a Noah Syndergaard injury. You know, other guys going down. The Nationals have had issues. Steven Strasburg shut down. The Phillies team right now, their pitching is an absolute mess. And when you follow the beat writers who cover these teams, there's that sense of this is a total disaster. This team can't recover. Well, someone, Dave, has got to win the National League East. What you got on that?
Yeah, well, somebody's going to win, and somebody else will make the playoffs because they're guaranteed two playoff spots. But, yeah, the Braves rotation with all the injuries, other than Max Fried, it's a mess. What did I look up here? So Mike Soroka went down August 3rd. And since then, the Atlanta rotation has averaged less than four innings a start. You know, they won last night, but Tuki Toussaint, you know, what he walks guys.
Yeah.
You know, Kyle Wright has really struggled. They're going to give Josh Tomlin a chance in their rotation. But, yeah, then you go to the Phillies, worst bullpen ERA in the majors. The Mets, they can hit, but they can't pitch. You know, and Jacob DeGrom missed his last start or got it pushed back. You know, the Marlins, I don't think are really buying them. Strasburg, you know, with him being out, that hurts the Nationals. But, yeah, I guess somebody will win this division.
And if you are a fan of the Phillies or the Mets or the Braves or the Marlins, for that matter, any of these teams, don't just assume that your team is out of it. Because the division right now is a complete mess. It's a total mud bog. And it, you know, the five-game winning streak might be the difference between first place and fourth place with the way this division is.
Last night was a huge win for the Braves, you know, a two-game swing, you know, compared to the Nationals. And, you know, look, they're still the favorite. I think Fangraphs has them at 57% to win the division. I don't think it's really that high given the state of the rotation, but yeah, it's going to be a wild September in that division.
Well, with Sunday Night Baseball this week with Phillies against Braves, we're looking to get somebody from the Braves on the podcast later in the week. I got somebody in mind, but hopefully that'll happen. I appreciate you coming on the podcast a couple times last week and hosting, Dave.
All right. Go enjoy some beverages with your cousins.
Thank you. Dan Connolly covers the Baltimore Orioles for The Athletic. And, Dan, we got to have you on to talk about the Orioles because, my God, they're right in the middle of the playoff race. How shocked are you?
I tell you what, they've ended right now, Buster, and we have ourselves a ticker tape parade in Baltimore down Pratt Street. it's been kind of crazy. I'm shocked. I thought I gave it 20 wins, 19 wins, I think was my over-under. And obviously they've got 12 already. So that in itself is pretty crazy.
So tell me why you think this is happening.
Well, they can hit. They can really hit. And the guys who, you know, who are hitting this year, we saw this in the second half of last year when no one was paying attention to the Orioles. Anthony Santander was having a real good second half. And Hanser Alberto was batting over 300. And Rio Ruiz really was starting to come into his own in September. And Renato Nunez hit 31 home runs. So we kind of saw this. And it's like, is it a fluke? Or are these guys really coming to their own? They're all between the ages of 25 and 27. And they are. And they can hit. And, you know, they continually hit. And if they can get a little bit of pitching, if they can get some starting pitching, their bullpen's been okay. But obviously the starting pitching is not going very deep. And so because of that, you're starting to see cracks and you're starting to see losses and things are starting to come a little bit back to normal. But this team is going to hit, I think, for all 60.
Do you think, and it's kind of a weird question to ask in a year in which no one is allowed to attend games, have they captured the imagination of Orioles fans yet?
I think they have captured the interest at this point. I think people are, you know, I did a bar blog at my Connolly's Tap Room on The Athletic yesterday about when do you start thinking about playoffs? When do you start thinking that this team is real? And a lot of people basically responded to me saying that they're into it now, that they're interested. They kind of have given up after 2017 and that collapse in September 2017. Really did not return for 18 and 19, which were the two most, you know, losingest seasons in Orioles history. But they're back now. They're interested. They want to see what's going to happen. I don't think the imagination is set yet. I think people still kind of expect maybe the wheels to fall off a little bit, specifically because, you know, the pitching is a question. However, I think that people are back into it. There were, you know, people through this long stretch were just waiting for baseball. And when baseball came back, Orioles baseball was a lot better than anyone anticipated. So I think their interest is there. I'm sure the TV ratings are really good locally. And I think there would be a few more people out at the ballpark because this team, and specifically because of the offense, is fun to watch.
I think you would agree with me. They're probably at least 2 to 4 years from being relevant in terms of the context of how good the Yankees are, or, you know, where the Rays are, where the Blue Jays are, because they still have to, you know, collect enough pitching to contend consistently. And with that as the framework for this, which of these guys that you're watching now in this lineup do you think may still be part of that solution in the 2 to 4 years when the team starts to turn the corner?
Yeah, I was actually putting it as 4 to 5, honestly.
I was being nice.
and I think Baltimore appreciates that. And I think if it's 2 to 4, I think several of these guys will be part of it. If it's 5 or close to 5, 4 to 5, I think, you know, Santander is 25 years old. He'll still be a free agent after 3 more seasons from this. So if you're looking at 5, maybe not him, but he's probably the guy that we're kind of circling, saying this guy could be part of this rebuild. Truly could be around after it. He's the kind of guy that, you know, if he continues to do this, you know, he's the kind of guy you would think they would give a little money to, because he really does kind of have it all. And, you know, he's only 25 right now. So he's a guy you would think would be one of those, you know, advanced free agent type deals. If he continues to do stuff he obviously likes in Baltimore, all these guys love it there because they're all kind of growing up together. As far as 2 to 4 years from now, I'd say maybe a third of this roster. You know, a lot of these guys are just basically get you over the hump guys. Right. And that's really all they were supposed to be. The starting rotation for a young team, for a rebuilding team, you only have one member of the starting rotation. That's John Means, who's under the age of 31. I mean, they basically put veterans in there that could kind of just clog the space and give them some innings and throw strikes, which is really one of the biggest differences, Buster, this year from, you know, the last couple of years with this team, is they're actually throwing strikes more. It was abysmal. And, Doug Brocale was going crazy, as was Brandon Hyde, just because these guys were getting opportunities last year and nobody would throw the ball over the plate. And they're starting to get guys to do that. That's a good sign. But I mean, most of these guys are filler. I mean, you know, they are guys to kind of you won't be seeing in 4 years from now. But the nice thing, the neat thing about this, and Chan Sisko said this a couple of days ago, Rio Ruiz has said this, all of these guys on this team, I mean, to the 28-man roster, there's not a guy on here that doesn't have something to prove. And that goes from the very beginning, from the young guys we mentioned, to the Chris Davises, to the Wade LeBlancs. Every single guy on this team is basically fighting for a job for next year, either in Baltimore or somewhere. And that's kind of what's giving them a little bit of an edge.
Last one for you. The trade deadline is 13 days away, and I do think it's not going to be as star-spangled as we're used to seeing a trade deadline, because there's just so many variables. And you start with the most obvious one, is that teams are not going to want to give up big-time prospects for a player and then have the season shut down and never get that value return. No one really knows where the financial landscape's going to be. The Orioles actually have a guy who I think kind of threads the needle on a lot of that stuff. I do wonder, for teams that have some financial flexibility, who actually are interested in winning this year, could be really of interest, and that's Alex Cobb. You know, you've got, of course, the Dodgers are run by Andrew Friedman, who knows Alex Cobb well from his days with the Tampa Bay Rays. You have the Yankees. You have the Mets, who are currently up for sale. You know, maybe despite all their current financial problems, the current ownership, the Wilpons would say, hey, if we have a chance to make the playoffs, we jump in. The Phillies, the Braves. I could run through, you know, 3 or 4 other teams as well. And it seems like Alex Cobb, I mean, you're watching it in a way that I'm not. It does feel like that, you know what, he's back to the point where you could look at him if you were a contender. He's in year 3 of a 4-year, $57 million deal and say, you know what, maybe I give up something for him. The Orioles probably are looking to shed his salary anyway, and he could help us this year if, in fact, we finish. And then at the very least, he can help us in 2021. What do you think?
I think absolutely, if teams are willing to spend right now, it's not even really almost as much as a give up. Obviously, the Orioles would like something back in return, something they can kind of hang their hat on and say, hey, we got these two young guys. But it's all about who's going to take that salary. I mean, it's $15 million next year. It's prorated of $14 million this year. are there teams out there who feel like they're financially strong enough that, you know, that they're going to take him in August, are guaranteed that September and the playoffs are going to happen, and can be able to turn around and do something next year with him and absorb that? Basically, a lot of the teams you mentioned, it seems like they could, but you know, you just kind of got to wonder what the financial landscape is. Alex Cobb can still pitch. Alex Cobb never stopped being able to pitch. He stopped being able to stay healthy. And that's the problem here. And right now, you know, he's healthy and he's pitched good. Yesterday, he was his first, I guess you would say, tough start. But basically, he gave up a 3-run homer after giving up 3 infield singles. I mean, it was just, you know, it's one of those fluke kind of things, and it got him. But he still went 6 2/3, which is the longest any Orioles starter has gone this year. Alex Cobb can pitch, and Alex Cobb can help somebody. And the Orioles are willing to deal Alex Cobb, but Alex Cobb wouldn't mind. He really likes where he is right now. I think last year he was looking to maybe move on. I think he really likes the young group and the energy there. But I think he'd be, you know, more than willing to go to a contender and try to get a ring. Mentioned with the Dodgers, Friedman is really an interesting fit there. All of that said, it's going to have to be a team that's willing to, A, give up money, and B, give up something player-wise. I think the Orioles, obviously, salary relief is something they're always looking for right now in a rebuild. But they do want to be able to show their fans, yeah, we gave up our best pitcher, but hey, we got 2 more guys in the pipeline. And that's the whole thing. This prospect, this farm system is going to number 12, according to Baseball America. It's got some guys coming, but they're pretty far away. The best guys they have would have probably been at Frederick, which is high A or double A Bowie this year. And so that really, you know, the whole pandemic, the whole layoff, the no minor league baseball, that hurts the Orioles. So they need to keep building that talent pipeline. I think they'd be more than willing to trade Alex Cobb, but it's got to be the right fit for someone who's willing to take on that contract and can give them 1 or 2, you know, prospects that they can feel good about.
Yeah, his xFIP right now is 3.79. And I think the way, if you're a contending team, the way you look at it is, okay, this winter, if Alex Cobb was a free agent this winter, would we be willing to sign him to a 1-year, $15 million deal based on what we're seeing now? And, you know, of course, you're going to measure that against the landscape. My instinct is that someone like him this winter probably is going to get $10 to $12 million. But you know what? Maybe you take on that little extra money for the short-term deal, a proven veteran on a 1-year contract in 2021. That's not bad. And I could easily see someone like Andrew taking a look at that and being interested.
The only thing is the advancing age and more so the health situation. I mean, he basically, you know, he had 2 surgeries last year. He's coming back from that. The year before, he set out for the contract part of it, you know, trying to get himself a deal. And then he had blisters and he had some nagging stuff here and there, and that limited him to several games. So, I mean, it's a situation where, you know, he really hasn't pitched almost in 2 full seasons because last year was a complete wash and then this year was a wash for everybody up until now. So you got to make sure that, I mean, you know, you're going to be betting on people's health anyway, and here's a guy with health risk. But he's a great clubhouse guy. He's a great veteran. He's a great guy to have around. I mean, I think he can certainly help a team. They're just going to have to figure those specifics out.
All right, Dan, thanks for doing this and have fun watching a contender.
Absolutely. It's been a while, man. It's been a while. Take care of yourself, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First one up, Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit writes in, which recently called up Detroit rookie will have the greatest impact this year?
The most talented, Casey Mize. I can't wait to see him pitch. When you're that young and you have that kind of command, I mentioned the ratio so far in professional baseball, 120 strikeouts, just 26 walks. That's pretty special. So he's going to be someone who I think is going to have impact right away, especially pitching in the American League Central.
Last one for today, Jake Reagan at underscore Jake Reagan writes in, while the Braves, Nats, and Mets all lose key contributors, the Phillies have stayed mostly healthy, knock on wood. Does that, combined with an offense that's top 5 in the NL and OPS average and OBP, make them a dark horse division winner?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I don't know if you agree with what Dave and I were saying, Taylor, about the National East. It is wide open.
Yeah, it's definitely wide open. I'm not super sold on the Phillies because I watched the Orioles wipe the floor with them, but I guess that's just kind of the way this season's going. I don't know. Definitely dark horse. I definitely would lean Braves over anyone. The Nationals still aren't really impressing me either. But yeah, I mean, sure. Why not? And that does it for Bleacher Tweets for today. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dave, to Dan, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.